You're listening to Wheelationships.
For the last several weeks, as you know, we've been talking about fences and boundary lines and the laws that govern those fences that we need to put in place in our life. And each of these laws are true. Now, we can interfere with the consequences of these laws. We can influence their impact in our relationships for both good and for bad, but that doesn't alter the truthfulness of each one of these laws. So when communicated, these fences can make clear what we want, what we don't want, but we also have to understand what other people's fences and boundary lines mean to us on our part of our action and activity and responsibility. So that's going to take us into this 10th law. If you want to update on the previous 9, again, you can go to the podcast. But this is law number 10, which is the law of exposure. And this law defines as fences need to be visible to others and communicated to them in relationships. They need to be visible and communicated. A fence that is not communicated is not working. It's as if you did not have the fence there at all. God is the originator of fence design and installation. He tells us in His Word what He loves and what He hates. He tells us what He expects and what He won't tolerate. And ultimately, the reason He has these fences and boundary lines is for us to have a life full of truth and full of love so that we can incorporate those things in our lives. We don't live in a vacuum. We live in relationship with God and with others. And these boundary lines are essential in order to keep relationships healthy. We are responsible, as we've said before, what is within our area of our property lines, within our fences, and we have to set those in wise and healthy places. But all too often, we keep these fences a secret. We erect them internally, but we don't tell other people about them. They become invisible fences in our life. We don't communicate them. And most of the time we don't communicate them is because of fear. We're afraid of getting someone else upset. We're afraid of how they might respond if we have to say no in this area. Are you guys lost on a blank? Are we okay?
Yes.
Okay. Just define. Yes.
We fear that we might not be liked.
We're good.
We're afraid that we might get someone angry, or we have guilt if we put those things in place. And sometimes you might use the excuse that communicating a fence just takes too much work. It's too much effort. It's too hard, especially if articulating your thoughts is a difficult thing to do. You may use that excuse, that verbal expression just is way too much effort, so you do nothing, at least externally. But I guarantee you, you've done something internally already. You just have not communicated where that line is. So instead of communicating an honest no, we might withdraw passively and quietly. You might secretly resent telling someone when they've hurt you or they've made you angry. We avoid, we retreat, we manipulate, or we privately endure some kind of a pain. All of these things in order to insulate us from having to experience something negative with someone else or from someone else. So it's a way we kind of protect ourselves. But if we do all those things, the retreating, the manipulating, the protecting, while still hoping that we gain the desired effect that we want to have had we really put a healthy boundary line in place. We want the result without the work. And it doesn't happen that way. Communicating those boundaries forces responsibility to stay in the area of responsibility, whether that's your area or somebody else's. Now, some of the temperaments may be more tempted to use these avoidance techniques, but all are going to be susceptible. Retreat feels safe. I happen to be one of those types of temperaments that I would just rather retreat and avoid instead of having to confront and deal, because I'm not comfortable doing that. I have to learn to do that in a healthy way. Retreat feels safer. It might be safer, but it doesn't strengthen your relationships. Subtle manipulation may seem less threatening, but again, it doesn't bring about healthy aspects in a relationship. It's only going to weaken those things. So you might find a husband or a wife in a relationship that for 20 years doesn't express and communicate how they feel about things and their opinions and communicate where those boundary lines are in a relationship. And 20 years goes on and then all of a sudden, boom, they file for divorce. That is a boundary line that they have set there that was uncommunicated for 20 years. Or you might find parents who give and give and give and do for their kids well beyond what is healthy for that kid's life, and the kid grows up and suddenly doesn't want to have anything to do with mom and dad, and they're like, what? You know, boom, there's a fence line, a boundary line that has been put there that was never communicated before, and now they're baffled as to why, after all I've done for you, are you not having this relationship with me? Or two coworkers, when one continuously crosses the fence line, so to speak, and works in the area, in the fields of another worker, taking responsibility that doesn't belong to them, trying to fix things that they don't have any business fixing. And until one day there's a verbal explosion, or the other party stays quiet and very subtly, kind of behind the scenes, points out the downfalls of that coworker to either other coworkers or to the boss, kind of manipulates and very subtly sets those things up. All of those things are examples where relationships have suffered because fence lines weren't communicated. But they tried to accomplish the same thing in other ways that weren't honest, that weren't truthful. So when we deal with people behind their backs, or we deal with them through manipulation, we typically have goals in mind that are more about wanting someone to pay without them knowing we're involved. Maybe we aren't going to go behind somebody's back or manipulate, but maybe we're dealing with a situation indirectly instead of communicating a clear fence line. We've talked before about indirect communication, so I'm not going to go into the specifics of that, but we want a resolution without difficulty. We want it to come out well without communication. We don't want to have to encounter negative emotions towards ourselves, and we want the perception of the other person, the perception they have of us, to be a positive one, so we aren't truthful with our feelings. But look at Psalms 51:6. It says, "You desire honesty from the heart, so you can teach me to be wise in my inmost being." Proverbs 8:7, "I speak the truth and hate every kind of deception." That's what we need to have in our mindset as well. There's a plethora of scriptures about honesty and truthfulness, but that's what we need to have. We need to hate every kind of deception, and that's what those subtle indirects and manipulations are. They are a deception. Sometimes we out and out lie. Most people aren't compulsive liars. I think I've only met maybe one or two where I'd go, boy, you know, they're... truth to them is only what will garner them attention. You know, they don't have truth like we know truth. But you know, that's not the majority, that's the minority of people. Most people often lie more in, or dishonest. They don't even want to use the word lie probably. They'll call it dishonest or maybe not tell everything in more subtle ways. And the primary reasons that we've already mentioned, they want to manage someone else's perceptions or emotions that involve them. But we do. We resort to these other little techniques we have acquired through our life to avoid this whole law of exposure. So we don't have to be clear. We don't have to communicate clearly. We hope that the negative will just work itself out. We hope we won't have to communicate the specifics. Now, we've had enough teachings in this class over the last 2 years to know that communication can be very difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. That's why there's so many books on the market about ways to improve your communication and to communicate well. Another thing that we do besides this whole indirect communication and manipulation is what's called triangulation. We bring in a third person. Instead of me going to you who I have a problem with, I'm going to go to you and tell you about the problem that I have with that person instead of going directly to them. And all that does is cause more conflict. It just makes the problem more difficult. And when we communicate indirectly, we become part of the problem. We quickly step into Satan's snare of anger and strife, and we open the door to him to be at work in our life in a negative way. Ephesians 4:25, it's the scripture that he referred to in the video. It's there on your sheet. Put away every falsehood and tell your neighbor the truth, because we belong to each other. And don't sin by letting anger get control. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, for anger gives a mighty foothold to the devil. Because of fear, we bottle things up. We let the devil have a foothold. We hope they get the message by how we're acting, by our body language. We hide those aspects of ourself, how we think and how we feel, in the darkness. And it's in that darkness that the devil has opportunity to hinder us. But God tells us we have to live in the light. And it's in the light that we have access to God and to others. Psalms 43:3, send out your light and your truth, let them guide me. The law of exposure says that it is better, life is better lived in the light. Things are better out in the open, even if they are negative. Now, you're probably thinking what I'm thinking, so let me say it here. This does not mean you need to bring up every little negative thought or feeling or slight that bothers you. Yeah, Wendell?
I have a question. You may not have an answer today. We all do this. I mean, this is something that all of us do. If that's the case, did God create us that way? If not, if so, why? And if not, how did it come about?
Our selfish sin nature. We want to protect ourselves.
You think he's just trying to protect? I guess I'm saying, but
no, he didn't.
Okay. How did this come about? Because again, everybody does this.
Sin nature. I mean, you look at the original story, Adam and Eve. I mean, when they chose, and you know, I mean, when they made that choice, there was suddenly that knowledge of good and evil, which changed things. And they suddenly said, "Hey, we're naked."
And having this trait is evil. It's a sinful trait.
Having the trait is it evil?
Or a sin? I mean,
to want to hide. I think we tend to hide who we are, and we do that out of what she said, out of fear, and out of that recognition of that sin nature. That, you know, I don't want you to really know who I am, because if you knew who I am, you wouldn't like me. We have, you know, I have to hide these certain things. I have to hide these certain thoughts because, you know, that's going to hurt relationship. When in actuality, when we open ourselves up to each other, you know, when somebody comes to you and says, you know, I was wrong here, you know, and we not only admit to it, but we make restitution there. That doesn't draw a wedge between you. It actually draws you closer. You know, when we, you know, yeah, there's things we don't know about each other that when we find out about them, we go, well, I'm not so sure I like that guy. I'm not so sure I like her. But until we do that, we just hide parts of ourselves. You know, that says that we don't really have as much access as we need to have. I mean,
in today's society, though, we've gotten to be masters of this, putting on these masks. You know, putting on your smile to show up at church on Sunday is the prime example. You know, everything is good. Life is great. You know, it's all wonderful.
And excuse me. And what happens is because of the world system and Satan's system is to punish you for exposure. That's not God's system. God's way is exposure brings the chance for healing. Whereas, you know, you expose someone in order to punish them. We're going to dig dirt up on you so that we can punish you and drive you into the ground. And,
yeah. God's exposure is all about truth, all about life, and life more abundantly. But, you know, like we were saying, it doesn't mean you have to bring up every little offense, every little slight. Most of the time, you just need to grow thicker skin and not allow your feelings to dictate how you're going to behave in a particular relationship. But when values are violated, when someone is injured or behaving unacceptably, then overlooking, avoiding, triangulating, manipulating is not going to help. There needs to be that communication, those boundary lines made. So what do we do? How can we actively communicate those needs, those desires, those wishes, those things within our fences? And especially, how can we teach our children, especially if you have a really shy child, or like Tim talked about last week, the very passive personality that struggle with initiating communication in these areas? How can we encourage clear boundary lines for other people to have, for us to encounter as we relate with them? So here's a couple rules we're going to go into on how to deal with this. Rule number one, this is especially critically important if you're still raising kids, live the law of exposure yourself. So here's what can happen when that law is violated. Dr. Cloud gives an example of this. He went into a home of a colleague. 12-year-old boy there was unusually industrious, running around cleaning, vacuuming, picking up laundry, doing these things that was not typical of this particular 12-year-old little boy. So we asked, what are you doing? What's wrong? And his comment was, well, I think my mom's mad, but I'm not really sure why. I think maybe it might have been something that I did, but I'm not sure, so I'm just going to do these things just in case that might be what it is. And as he began to dig and get to the bottom of the story here, it turned out that this was pretty typical in this particular home. When mom was upset, she did not communicate to people directly what she was upset about. So everyone sort of had to guess why she was mad, perhaps kind of assume what maybe they did wrong and figure out how to fix it, and all their energy and all their efforts was going into trying to redirect mom's mood, because how many of you know mom's mood sets the whole tone of the house? And so everybody was spending their time trying to regulate and dictate mom's moods because mom did not communicate directly what she was feeling and what she was thinking and why. And not only did this put a strain on the marriage, it was teaching this boy some really harmful relationship habits. It was causing him to be insecure because he never really knew, when am I in the positive, when am I in the negative, when have I done right, when have I done wrong. He was so busy worrying about mom's feelings and navigating through all her indirect communication that he wasn't free to just love and enjoy mom. And then the last thing that he was learning was he was learning a bad behavioral pattern in relationships that he was going to model someday in relationships of his own that were going to bring him a lot of heartache and a lot of difficulty. So the law of exposure, being making those fences visible and communicating them, have to start in your home. It's where they're going to be learned. It's where they're going to be taught. For good or bad, you're teaching something there. So rule number two. Make the fence clear. It's very hard for people to live by the rules when they don't know what the rules are. Galatians 3:24 in the Message, it says, the law was like those Greek tutors which were with which you are familiar, who escort children to school and protect them from danger or distraction, making sure the children really get to the place they set out for. That's what these laws are. They're tutors. They teach us. They make things clear and understandable. It helps us not to be distracted. When your fence is in a wise place, you're not distracted. You reach those relational goals you're trying to reach. But again, it's very hard to know what to do when the goals are unclear. Tim and I stayed in a home recently. Illustrates this in a very simple manner. The mom and dad had shared with us on a previous time the trouble they were having putting their little 3-year-old boy to bed and having him stay there through the night. They had all their efforts, all their attempts. They had done so many things to no avail. But we happened to be there to stay overnight this particular evening, and it came bedtime for this little guy. And so they went through the regular ritual, you know, that you do as moms and dads. You brush the teeth, you read the story, you know, you get the hugs, the kisses, and you shuffle him off to bed. So off he went, no fanfare, no argument, there he goes. But in a matter of minutes, he was back around the corner, had something else he had to say. They told him to go to bed, and he shuffled back into his bed. A few minutes later, he popped back around the corner into the living room again and just kind of stood there grinning at them, didn't say anything, just sort of grinning like, here I am. And of course they thought that was just so cute, because he is a cute little guy, and he just thought he was adorable. Well, what are you doing here, buddy? You need to go on back to bed. You know, well, I don't want to go to bed. You know, so dad got another book and coaxed him back into his bedroom with another story again. And then he was back again. This time there was no dialogue, no grin. He just sort of shuffled his little sleepy body over to mom, who was sitting in the chair, and she scooped him up and hugged him and cuddled him and just kind of held him there for a while. So yet again, he successfully avoided being where he was supposed to be, doing what he was supposed to be doing, and all the while garnering very positive attention for his disobedience from mom and dad. So unfortunately, as the night and the evening and the night wore on, this escalated to the point that there were tears and crying on both parts because mom and dad's sleep was now being interrupted. And those positive reactions, those positive responses he was getting, suddenly turned into negative responses, but his action was exactly the same. He was doing the same thing. He got positive rewards first, and then he got negative rewards for the same offense. And because of unclear offenses and inconsistent consequences, that behavior didn't change. In his little mind, it was okay, and then it's not okay. I was cute, and now I'm not cute. I'm getting cuddled, and now I'm getting spanked. So it's very confusing when mom and dad aren't consistent and aren't clear in communicating where that fence line is, because he had a 50-50 chance of getting what he wanted. So it was worth the gamble. And a lot of teens think the same thing. When you're inconsistent, they have a 50-50 chance of getting what they want, so it's worth the risk. Adults grow up doing the same thing, trying to see if they can maybe hit that one time where they're going to be able to get away with it. You got to be clear, stick to it, and don't be surprised if you're not consistent and clear and then things go awry. Yes.
And if mom is one way and dad is the other, you got a 50-50 chance.
Yes. You sure do.
It's successfully divided in common.
So rule number three, cure fears and make communication safe. Now, I've already stated one of the main reasons we don't like to communicate is we're afraid. We're afraid of what the perception, we don't want them to withdraw from us, we don't want them to get angry with us, we don't want them to think poorly of us, and truly the first place you learn this kind of thinking is in the home you grew up in. I've shared before, I grew up in a house where I knew that I was loved, but we did not communicate, we did not express our anger, our emotions, our fears, or any of that kind of stuff. We didn't communicate. If you were angry, you just got over it. You didn't go to somebody and tell them what they said or did made you angry. And for me, the message was communicated. Now, whether my siblings got the same message or not, I don't know, but my perception of this was, I can't say anything because I will either hurt your feelings or I will get you angry. Neither one of those things was something I wanted to have to encounter or deal with, so the communication was not there. However, somewhere along the line, I did learn the whole lob and run technique, you know, where you throw out the barb and then you run for cover. You know, that was okay because you didn't have to deal with the whole interaction communication thing. So I married a guy, though, who came from a home of much better communication, not perfect, but better. But he had the whole phlegmatic, passive personality thing going that he talked about last week. Couple that with his gender as a male, who's really not keen on communicating to begin with, and you can imagine we had some problems in learning to communicate with one another. I had to learn how to communicate in a healthy way. You know, he had to communicate with more effort, you know, with more energy. And in couples, I mean, this is not unusual. One of the biggest areas couples have to continually work on is in their area of communication. But we hinder that communication when we set up an atmosphere of fear where somebody's allowed to expose themselves in their feelings and in their emotion because of how we might react or respond to those things. We reinforce them. I'm going to get you a little chart up here. It's not in your handout, with three little incidences and how we either reinforce somebody's fear by how we respond and react, or how we can cure their fear and make the relationship something where they feel safe enough to come and talk to us. So let's say someone gets angry at a limit. We've put that fence there, somebody doesn't like it, and they get angry about it. Here is how we can reinforce their fear and make sure they're going to stay in that perpetual sense of, I can't talk to you. We get angry back. We make him feel guilty for feeling angry. We give him the silent treatment. We act devastated. Or we compare him or her to someone else. So-and-so wouldn't get mad at that. What's your problem? And there's a lot more. I limited it to just a few. And here's the cure. Here's how we can help communication in that situation. Empathize with the anger. I understand that you don't like that. I can understand why you would be unhappy about that. Help him put his words into anger, especially if this is a little kid or somebody that has a lot of trouble articulating how they're feeling. Sometimes it helps if you will help them articulate how they do feel, why that's made them angry. Keep the limit, and then limit expression that is attacking or inappropriate. So those are some of the ways we either reinforce it or cure it. So let's say they're upset with something that you did wrong. Here's how you can reinforce their fear. Act injured by the accusation. Well, I can't believe that bothers you. How could you say that? Blame back. Well, I wouldn't have done that if you hadn't have done. Withdraw your love. Get angry. Those are reactions and responses how you can be guaranteed you're going to continue fostering that fear in a relationship. Here's some cures for that, though. Empathize the pain they feel. We've talked through every single law, empathy. I can see why that would hurt you, or I can understand why that would make you angry. Make sure empathize that. Listen attentively and be open to feedback. Here's the biggie. If you were wrong, apologize. I've told Tim before I want to do a whole Sunday just on apology. I'm continually working with my male child and teaching him the importance of an apology, especially to the ears of a woman. She needs those things. If you're wrong, apologize. Ask them to tell you if you do it again. That's a hard one. You've done something wrong. They've brought it to your attention. You have apologized for it. I'm sorry I've done this. I will work better. Will you let me know if I do that again? That's humbling. That's really opening yourself up. If you did nothing wrong, then say you understand. You can tell them you don't see it the same way that they see it, but thank them for telling you. You've let the environment be safe that they can come to you. Doesn't mean you were wrong. Yeah, Tony?
How do you communicate that they did something that caused the reaction without the blame back?
Usually if you don't start with, you did, but I felt this way, that usually makes somebody feel a whole lot less threatened instead of, you know, just pointing the finger to begin with. You know, I responded this way because this is how I felt.
You're not. Yeah, and if I heard the question right, how, you know, just remember, how can I do this without them doing...
Most anger is brought about by one other action.
Well, it means I'm trying to manage what they're doing. What we're saying here is what you're trying to do is not push their button.
Yeah.
There's a difference between pushing their button because you're trying to get a reaction, or recognizing that I'm going to blame you back. I'm pushing your button. Okay. Now, when you're trying to say, you know, I don't want them to react this way, and I'm trying to manage their reaction.
Yeah, but a lot of times your reaction is because they've already pushed your button. And so in reaction, you're pushing their button back. And how do you articulate that without pushing that second button, I guess would be it.
Well, go ahead.
You go, Tony. Well, this is a deep hole you're digging.
It sounds like at that first section when they originally pushed your button, you didn't respond right because now you're saying you're reacting to it. Where if you go back to where it says what something that they did to upset you and how to cure that, that's how you should have reacted to begin with. Instead of trying to, I'm angry because of this.
You have to
stop that first.
Right, you got to get off the spin cycle.
Right. In a simple example, I had to do this weekend because we were talking about something and my button got pushed. So how I responded to that was, when you say this is what I hear. I'm not telling him, you know, how could you say such a thing to me? But I'm letting him know when you verbalize it that way, you may not mean this message, but this is what I'm hearing. When I hear this is how that makes me feel. And then he's able to understand where I'm coming from instead of trying to just respond to my emotion. He's hearing what I'm communicating. Because a lot of times all we have is emotion throwing back and forth, but nobody's really getting the message. Does that make it a little clearer for you? No, all right.
Yeah.
All right. The last thing, we'll have to stop here. The last thing on this little chart thing is they're hurt by life. Someone's come to you and they're hurt by life. How can you reinforce that fear and keep that person from feeling like they're safe to communicate with you? Tell them to stop whining. You can make fun of them. You can ignore them. You can compare them with someone else. Well, so-and-so went through that and they did fine. You know, buck up. What's the problem? Or you can minimize the hurt. You can cure the fear by empathizing how they feel, give understanding and comfort. And this one I added because this is what I have encountered so many times and I realize that it drives me bonkers. Don't be too quick to correct, teach, or preach. And then the last one there, require him to work out his problems. Don't be the buffer or the enabler. Doesn't mean you go to the rescue in order to solve this. We're going to finish those other rules next week. Have a great week. Think about how you're communicating this week. Have a good one.